this point, the issue of Kite that the first part of this interview was for is published and has been sent in. So this second part, thankfully, we have a platform in Black Talk Radio Network that's down to post our continued discussion around these questions, you know. So just to continue off of what we've been discussing, are there any updates that you have? Is there anything that you would like to share to start us off that you've noticed or that seems significant to you since the last time we spoke a couple weeks back?
I would just like to start with just this week, we lost Lenny Mandela, and that was like very impactful to me. That was like one thing that really stood out to me because of the woman she was. I remember she came to Philly, Pennsylvania in 1996 or 97 for Millions Women's March. And she spoke on how she used to get dragged to her house, how she was moving house to house, escaping the government's plans. And I watched that DVD just recently, and it's like ironic that she passed away. So that was something that was very touching to me. She's like very inspirational for me.
No doubt. Well, certainly appreciate your raising the issue of the warrior spirit and Winnie Mandela. And what I would just like to follow up on around what we had discussed in the first part of this conversation, you had mentioned it being a bit of a shock how rude this environment can be out here in the city. And I'm just wondering if since then you've acclimated more to that, or has that changed for you at all? What seems to be the atmosphere in that regard?
Yeah, it's still the same. This atmosphere is really rude, and it's actually ignorant also. A lot of people are not aware of the surroundings and not just aware of the climate that we're living in. So Friday, I was actually on a movie set. I'm my own production assistant, so I was trying to stop people from coming on the movie set. And no matter how much you try to explain to people on what it is that you're doing, a lot of brothers and sisters out here have their mindset. They have like a fixed mind where they can't adjust. They can't make any type of changes. They're not nimble enough to allow you to do your job or whatever it is that's taking place at the moment. And that's weird. It's still weird to me that how non-nimble can people be, especially in New York City, right? Because we're overpopulated, and that's probably why we're so in a rush to do nothing. And I don't understand, but my like take on that is still New York is really rude. I haven't left this state of New York yet. As of yet, so I can't speak on other states, but New York is really ridiculous out here.
Certainly hear that, and I'm wondering to what degree you think that that issue of being rude and a lack of self-awareness or awareness of others, to what degree that connects with this issue of distractions that you mentioned in part one of this interview, you know, this question of just rampant distractions out here, and particularly in a city like New York that's so dense and so targeted with these various distractions.
Yeah, so the relations between it and New York, there's a lot of people that's not active in the revolution. And that's because they're busy doing nothing. Like they're in a rush to get nothing done. So they're being like blinded by reality. And that's really like the relationship that I put together right now. here and you running around, if you really have no place to go, you have nothing to do, you're so caught up in this time warp where it disallows you to actually see the bigger picture on what's going on. So, like, in the projects, New York City housing, everyone is rushing to, like, do something, and they bypass the garbage that's laying right in front of the apartment house, or just laying out in the lobby, or the cracks and the holes. And they just bypass all these things that's actually an issue, because they're not worrying about that. They're worrying about, like, the American dream, so-called, right? So it's just, like, this is a big distraction that a lot of people have. We don't slow down to actually see what's going on around us.
I really want to see how we can connect that issue across the walls now, because your point is well taken, and it strikes me as a perfect parallel for the issues that we are hearing about, reading about, seeing that go on the inside. So connecting that kind of issue and the distractions and rushing toward no substantial gains or no substantial resistance to the state of affairs that has been created around us. Could you connect that to your experiences on the inside? And did you find there to be parallel scenarios to what you just described seeing out here?
Yeah, of course. And it's the exact same thing. So out here, the macro to the micro inside there, so the exact same thing in there. It's just the micro, right? So you have the yard with a bunch of nothing going on. It's just a circle. It's like lab rats in a circle. So they give us low library or the general library, different avenues you can actually elevate your mind. A lot of people are so caught up with the TVs, the weight room. The weight room is cool, but they're caught up in things that's actually superficial instead of actually trying to gain knowledge within the system that's put in place for us to actually move forward in life. And that's the same thing that's going on out here, that we're so caught up. We're not in the yard in society, right? The yard is probably a little bigger because most people don't leave their radius of their neighborhood. This is, I guess, the exact same thing in prison. I've experienced both. Now I see out here there's just more people, and you get to actually see more of it being done. Like when I went to prison, I went in 2010. It's 2018. The exact same people are doing the exact same thing. So it's this time warp that we're all wrapped in.
To kind of continue in that vein, now that we are at the beginning of April, this marks the second month of the Redistribute the Pain campaign, a national inside campaign that's going on, called forth by heads from the Free Alabama movement, represented by others that have been continuously fighting from the inside against prison slavery. It's alternating each month, February, now April. The next month that they would be focusing on would be June. Their slogan that they're pushing is boycott, defund, bankrupt. And essentially, they're calling for heads on the inside, whether in Alabama or across the nation, on these months, like April, like February, and down the line throughout the year, to refrain from canteen purchases, collect phone calls, visits, and incentive packages. And so I just wanted to hear your thoughts on this initiative, whether it sounds like a valid one to you, and how you think such an initiative could affect prison slavery in the short and the longer term.
Yeah, in the long term, that's actually a good idea for the long term. For people that's going to come down the line, they will have the most effects, like the adequate, right? in a short term and actually, it didn't actually go as good because of the backlash that they received. So down the line, this is when Law Library came and a bunch of other things that came in place. But only with, like, that can, it can backfire just as the category did. Because now we see throughout the nation these things that these brothers, some brothers don't say lives for, are being taken back. So it has to be like a real set in stone, like agenda and a mission, and like really pinpointed to what it is that's going to be done, what's going to take place. And you have to be able to have foresight and see what's the end goal. Because I can't speak on the brothers that actually conducted the Attica riot, but they knew what they wanted at that moment. I don't think they saw 20, 30 years later that what they was willing to die for was going to be taken back. And if they would have saw that, I think they would have planned better. So it's really all about the planning. This can actually work if you boycott, not having visitors, packages, and ordering out. It can work. It just has to be something that lovers and prisoners can actually read and like accept. Because there's going to be a lot of resistance towards that. Because there's brothers that are going to say they only get visits once a year, twice a year. And they look forward to those. So it has to be, it can't just be a little selection of people that's going to accept the mission of this initiative. It has to be majority of the people that feel this type of way and are willing to make change. But there's this quote that 100% dissatisfied brings 100% change. So it has to be 100% dissatisfaction in order for some 100% change to come. If you're only 20% dissatisfied, only 20% is going to change. So the idea is actually great, but it has to be something that's seen. You have to be able to see what could come. And that's the thing about politics. A lot of these politicians, they put into place policies that's really not for now. It just affects people now, but it's really for something 20, 30 years down the line that they already see the climate of people. And that's the difficult part to choose. And it's a conflict because we're trying to shut down prison industry, right? So I don't believe something short anyway, because if we're trying to abolish it completely, the slavery, I don't believe something that can help the brothers in there now, and it would just, like, sensitize it instead of trying to find something that's going to abolish it. So the program will work for brothers in there now and a few years down the line, but that's not the mission. The mission is to actually do something now that'll abolish it. There will be no more brothers and sisters going into prison. And eventually, the prison is shut down.
No doubt. Definitely appreciate what you're saying there. And I'm reminded of former political prisoner Ramona Africa and what she said about the huge difference between resistance and sustained resistance, and how it's really about getting that sustained resistance on the ground that will be able to garner the kind of pushback that we truly need to get this system from up off of our throats. I think that you would be happy to know that these freedom fighters inside that have been advocating for this in their writings and the work that they've been doing, they've clearly pointed toward, you know, a long-term trajectory on this, you know, so it doesn't show any signs of letting up anytime soon. But I did want to share a quote from one of the articles produced by one of the organizers of this campaign who goes by Swift Justice. He published an article a few days ago, and in it, at one point, he says, quote, "Those of us who see the truth behind today's justice system and penal system and for what it is truly for are a minority. The truth of the matter is we are hated by the DOC administration and are even hated by our fellow slaves. Now, have you found this to be so, that speaking truth against the realities of prison slavery has made you hated not only by administrators inside, but even, you know, heads that were in your same condition under prison slavery?
Yeah, that's like so true, but I think that comes with it, right? That comes with change. Most people are afraid of the type of change I'm looking for and the type of change the brother's looking for. So you will have people that's content with their situation, and that everything's going fine according to them. And you come and you're trying to cause some type of mischief or whatever they want to label it. They don't want you around. They don't want you around. So, for example, let's say a brother he's working in the industry. He's working in the cold crack industry. He's making about $20 every 2 weeks. And then he's getting further visits with his wife or with his family member or anything. That's something that most prisoners or brothers and sisters, but I don't know if the females get trailer visits, but I know that's most brothers want that. They want to work in cold crack industry and want to get trailer visits, and they want to go on the visits, get packages. So you come and you're trying to prove to them why the cold crack industry is a big plantation and that we need to actually shut it down. Now you're messing with them. You're messing with how they live their life, how they subscribe to the prison lifestyle. So not either in your face, depending on the type of person you are, or behind your back, they'll talk negative. And some of them will actually go to the administration and try to do something. And try to either get you moved out the jail or something to that nature. So I've been in plenty of situations where brothers will come to me and say, another brother was cursing my name, or he's trying to actually get me moved out of the jail by saying I'm either selling drugs or doing anything, any type of illegal activity to get me thrown in the box or whatever. So, but it doesn't stop the mission. It doesn't stop the mission on the goal. If you have the love for the people, you're gonna have these type of obstacles. You're gonna have these type of adversaries come your way. Whether it's through the administration or through a pawn that the administration's using. But they don't know no better. So you have to, as you do for everyone else, you have to try to care for them as well. Those are the brothers actually that you need to try to speak to most. Because those brothers, they're potentially, if they have the type of drive that they have for administration, they can easily switch that drive over to the revolution. So as Malcolm X was once one of those brothers that was content with the way he was living. And he grown out of that, became one of the leaders of the revolution. So then you have brothers like that. So that quote is really true, that you do have to fight on both sides. You have to fight the people that you love and trying to save, and you also have to fight the open enemy, which is, it's a difficult task. It's not meant for the faint of hearts, but someone has to fight the battle.
Absolutely, this is true, and I know we're running up against these minutes, so just to close out this part, and perhaps we can arrange for maybe another installment of this?
Yeah, of course. If whatever I could provide for the cause, whether it's a spoken word or some type of literature or whatever it is, I'll be willing to do it.
No doubt, and that's respect. And I wanted to make sure that we got out to those who want to support heads like yourself when you were on the inside. There's a lot that's sent out as far as phone blitzing, the different facilities, for example, or letter writing campaigns and the like. So there are some things that people are familiar with, some perhaps less so. What would you tell to those who will be checking this interview that are on the outside? What are some ways that they should look to support heads on the inside, and particularly inside organizing?
Yeah, so for people that actually want to help brothers and sisters that's inside, brothers and sisters inside really just want someone to talk to. So, and they want somebody like to actually listen and really interact and engage in conversation. Brothers, then they can talk, right? So they have all day to talk. And they're looking for somebody to engage in conversation and to really prove that they're willing to help. Because there is a lot of brothers and sisters that they lost like some type of like way. They lost like motivation to believe that there's people out here that's willing to help and willing that is fighting for them. And it's like a trust issue. I don't know what happened. I wasn't one of those brothers. I believe, and I knew there was people out here. We just had to find a way to reach out. And that's a thing for brothers and sisters in prison. It's hard. If you don't have no one, it's hard to reach out. It's hard to actually reach out to brothers and sisters that's fighting for them. So that's one. If we can find a way to send in papers, send in articles to random brothers and sisters, you'll find one. Every time, you're not going to always hit a person that's the cause, but that person may be, he may hang with someone that is fighting for the revolution inside there, and he may pass on the information. So you just have to, we have to out here continue to keep trying. When I was inside, they didn't write me. They didn't send me the information. They sent someone I knew the information, and he mentioned it to me because he knew what I was doing in prison. So I took the time out of myself to write IWOC, introduce who I was, and to find out what IWOC was about. And now we're here. So it's just always about continuing to reach out to the brothers and sisters that's in there, and eventually we'll be able to save them all.
Great looks, brother, as always. And ideally, when we connect next, we can further discuss some of what you mentioned as far as the industry inside and CoreCraft specifically. Maybe, you know, break down some of those particulars. But as always, it's greatly appreciated. And let's make sure to get up again soon.
Yeah.